It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
A lot more was said and done since the victory was declared for centrist independent Emmanuel Macron and the defeat faced from a far-right nationalist Marine Le Pen in a very well-crafted event in front of the Louvre Museum tonight. Macron strode out to cheering crowds. It was basically his victory celebration. Now, most of the votes basically have been counted. 65% for Macron, 35% for Le Pen. The voters going for the 39-year-old candidate who's pro-European Union, pro-NATO, promising a program of reform, however vague. He's the first independent party candidate in modern French political history to win the presidency. Le Pen's nationalist message played well in many parts of the country that were hit hard by the stagnant economy. Also, her hard line on security resounded in a country that has been hit time and time again by terror strikes. But concerns about her polarizing rhetoric in the end did her in. Here's a little bit more of what both had to say tonight.
I know the divisions of our nation that led some to extreme votes. I respect these. I know the anger, the anxiety, the doubts that a large part of you have also expressed. It is my responsibility to hear these.
I call for all the patriots to join us in participating in the decisive political fight that is starting tonight. More than ever, in the coming months, France will be needing you. Long live the Republic, long live France.
Actually, typical of the two, Macron sounded a little bit like concession. Le Pen sounded like a defiant victory, Harris.
Okay, that's Greg Palcott from Fox News. This is Sandy Rios. Good morning. Happy Monday to you. I don't know how happy the French people are about their election yesterday, and it is kind of a mystery, but I want to spend a little time with this for a minute. It's very difficult, of course, to understand other people's politics. And France is not America, and the terms don't even mean the same. Nationalist means pretty much the same. You love your country. You want to put it above other countries, its interests, but it also can mean other things. And so I'm not an expert on Le Pen. I know a little bit. But Macron is a socialist. Look, Macron, 39 years old, loves the European Union. I'm going to play another report for you in just a second that's very creepy. Reminds me of something we saw here in this country when Barack Obama was elected. But we're going to play that in a second. Macron is 39. The other strange thing about him, he married his teacher, who he met, I think, when he was, what, 14, 15? And she's something like, I think she's 27 years older than he, something like that. It's just very strange to us as Americans, maybe strange to us in terms of Western civilization. The French, of course, long ago let go of their Judeo-Christian heritage, except, you know, not all of them. There are a lot of really fine, committed Christians in France, but they are certainly not in the majority. And, of course, the Jewish French are experiencing a lot of persecution, and the country's changing, and they are losing their grip. I just think this is a frightening time for them. So Emmanuel Macron, you know, is all about the EU, and the markets are soaring. So the big money people in the world, the big the big money people, the international business people in this world, including in this country, are happy about this because they think it brings stability to the markets. The people in France, you know, I was just reading the smaller towns in France. The unemployment is unbelievable, off the charts. They're really suffering. And, of course, their backs are being broken by the socialistic country that they live in. They're trying to pay for everything for everybody. And then they don't have border protections, and people are coming in to threaten them. As a matter of fact, this did not happen. Thank God this did not happen. But ISIS was calling for killing the candidates on election day. They said, kill the candidates and burn down polling stations. That's what they were calling for. Don't forget your duty as a Muslim. Choose a candidate to kill and a polling station to burn. And the problem is, of course, living, of course, we have some of this too, but not to the extent that France does. Living among the French people are members of ISIS, you know, in the community just down the street. And we've seen them kill the French and attack after attack. It's pretty frightening. They did not do that, but now Paris's main mosque said on Saturday that the election of centrist Emmanuel Macron as France's next president over Marie Le Pen was a sign of reconciliation between French religions. It's a clear sign of hope to French Muslims that they can live in harmony and respect of French values. Really? We'll see. We hope so. We hope so. We pray for the people of France. But I want you to hear, the other thing that you notice when you read these reports about what happened in France is the similarities between our last election and what's happening in France. Macron was saying on Saturday that his email had been hacked. It's this big deal about his email being hacked and complaining, and then the talking about how it must have been the Russians. And then the French government ordered that the media could not publish any of the contents of Emmanuel Macron's leaked emails to avoid influencing the election. So they had that much control. Nobody published them. I don't know what were in them. And I don't, you know, you think I don't know. The Russians, they hack Macron's email in order to get Le Pen elected. This is, of course, this is what they say here. This is, you know, it works. So I guess why not use it over there, too? And so, you know, I don't know that I would want Marie Le Pen. I don't know enough about her. I've heard things that are alarming. But I don't, there's just no way to know unless you are living there and you're part of the culture, really what the truth is on some of these things, because we cannot trust our press anymore. By the way, a third of French voters, the vote was something like 65% for Macron and 35% for Le Pen, which is, you know, pretty lopsided. Most of the rural people voted for Le Pen because they want borders. And they want France to be France again, and they want to get out of the European Union and out of, you know, underneath the control of the European Union. But they're not going to get that, probably never now. A third of French voters spoiled their ballots or abstained. They actually went to the polls and didn't vote. Isn't that interesting? It was sort of a protest vote. They said the abstention rate stood at 24.52%, which was the highest since the presidential election in 1969. So that's just kind of a few things I wanted to share with you. But this morning on Fox and Friends, Katie Hopkins, who's a reporter for the Daily Mail, was on. And I thought her interview was so interesting that I want to play it for you, because she was there and she's very colorful. She has very strong opinions. Reminds me of someone else I know. And, you know, I don't know Katie. I don't know whether her, you know, I don't follow her. But I just thought it would be interesting for us to listen to what she had to say about the French election. Katie Hopkins of the Daily Mail.
Good morning. I should tell you first up, I am not a Macron supporter. In no way do I endorse or support his presidency. But I did go to his party. I went to the Louvre. I followed the masses of people that were going there. And you know what really struck me was that it was all some kind of illusion, really. I was given, before I even knew why I was there, who I'd spoken to, what anyone was doing there, I was given a T-shirt. And then everyone was equipped with these rather tragic-looking flags to wave, and it became very choreographed, very scripted. It was almost like a whiff of propaganda about it. Every time the TV crews came to the party at the Louvre, they waved their flags madly, like they were told to do. And it just felt very curious. Someone here that I just spoke to said to me they didn't even bother voting because it was all set in stone already. Whoever was standing against Marine Le Pen was going to win, and certainly from the way the staging was put out, the way it was all organized in advance, it was very much that everyone knew he was going to win. And it felt very surface level, very kind of skin deep. There was nothing kind of authentic about it, like we see with the Trump election or for us with Brexit. But here it's very much the same picture. Paris and the metropolitan areas love Macron, and the rest of France wants Marine Le Pen. She got 11 million votes last night. It was never going to be a Brexit moment. Macron was always going to win. That was very clear from the organisation of the celebrations way in advance of the result being announced. We always knew he would win. You are completely right. He won by 65%, a much bigger win than I anticipated, actually. I would say that the second person, the person that came second, was not Marine Le Pen. It was the 14 million voters who chose to abstain or spoil their ballot paper rather than vote for Macron. I would also say that of the 20 million people that vote for Macron, they weren't really voting for Macron necessarily. They were voting to stop Marine.
All right, so that's Katie Hopkins from the Daily Mail. Did you hear that? Illusion. It was like an illusion. It was like it was propaganda, like it was staged, and the people were given flags. And when the cameras would come, this is in France. When the cameras would roll, they would wave the flags. It was staged. It was organized. Nothing authentic, like in the Trump election or in the Brexit vote in Britain. And I'm telling you, this is creepy to me. I think this is the way, you know, if you've read 1984 and any of the, if you understand totalitarianism, if you understand the creeping role of control of government over people, this is how it happens. And we're seeing that already start here, too. But evidently, France is much further along, certainly in speech codes. Katie wasn't through with her report, and I want you to hear the rest of what she has to say. Here it is.
What really hurt my heart last night, and yes, I do have a heart, was that he walked up to the stage to the tune of the EU national anthem, Joy. Oh, yeah. And I find that very difficult indeed. So this really is a man, you know, Marine Le Pen said it well. She said, whoever wins, it will be a woman. It will either be me or it will be Merkel. Mm. And I really do feel this is a win for Merkel and a loss for Europe. It's off the scale bonkers, this guy. The fact that he's got in kind of fills me with fear. When you walk around, you know, I walked out of the station to my hotel. It took me two or three blocks before I found a woman and found a white person. That's kind of the dodgy areas of France as they currently sit. There's a 10% unemployment rate, employment regulation that he brought in. He's a banker. He's married to someone old enough to be his gran who found him when he was at school age 15. He's never had a real job. He doesn't have any children. He doesn't have a proper family, so he doesn't connect with people.
He was a socialist at one point, wasn't he?
The best way to manage, oh my word, he's basically Hollande in a newer, younger, kind of prettier, I don't see it myself, guys. And ultimately, you know what? He thinks that we can solve all the problems of the world by opening our borders and paying for a few people to go to the movies. In reality, you know, we just had the Bataclan attacked. We had the attacks in Nice. We've got these kind of things springing up to stop trucks ramming into people. I think another terror attack, and you've got to question, what is this 38, 39-year-old going to do? His speech last night told us everything he was against. It didn't tell us anything that he was actually standing for.
That's Katie Hopkins of the Daily Mail. I just thought that was very colorful. You know, whether if I were in France, I would feel the same way as Katie. I don't know. But I certainly did hear a lot of the same themes that we're seeing here. This illusion, this propaganda, this fake excitement. Remember the columns when Barack Obama gave his announcement in Chicago and how they staged all of everything? Remember the posters, the creepy posters of him in those colors, it looked like a communist propaganda poster. The reason I would think of that, of course, is because I've been, as I've said many times before, I've traveled in almost every communist country besides Cuba. This is what they do. They show pictures much like this, portraits, hand-sketched of their, you know, leader, their dear leaders. And so it was just a very strange time, and all of these songs that sprung up in worship of Barack Obama was frightening, and I know that you remember that. So now France has their own things. They already have gone through such a horrendous last few years. And now with the outcome of this election, you can imagine the fear. I can only imagine the fear of the French people as they look to the future with this young, whoever he is, Macron, with the woman old enough to be his grandmother as his wife. It's a strange situation. The people of France need our prayers. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Now available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Like it or not, all of us are the sum total of the tiny decisions we make each day. This is Jim Garlow. If you don't like who you've become, perhaps it's because of the thousands of small, seemingly insignificant decisions you've made each day over the years. If you like what you've become and are becoming, it's because you've made several hundred thousand small, moment-by-moment decisions in a very wise manner. Most people don't realize that life is composed of lots of little decisions, all with a huge cumulative impact, the sum total of the so-called small decisions that builds character. Godly character doesn't just suddenly appear. Character doesn't just happen when we're called to a position of leadership. One forges a character through disciplined patterns of behavior. All you have to do is read the book of Proverbs, and my point will be clear. There's always more at jimgarlow.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump's pick to be the next Army Secretary is facing a barrage of ugly attacks from LGBT activists and Democrats. Dr. Mark Green is currently a state senator from Tennessee. He is also a devout and outspoken Christian. Dr. Green has faced criticism for being a creationist and for his position on LGBT issues. But CNN is gravely concerned because Dr. Green shared a column I wrote regarding religious liberty in the Pentagon. Back in 2013, I blasted President Obama's opposition to a religious freedom amendment. That amendment would have protected service members of faith, allowed them to practice their religion without fear of reprisal. But CNN seems to think Dr. Green is guilty of wrongdoing for simply affirming my perspective. It's a dangerous world out there, folks, when defending freedom of religion could get you disqualified from public service. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Well, James Comey, of course, testified, the head of the FBI, last Wednesday, and we really didn't get a chance to talk about that because of the National Day of Prayer on Thursday. And I want to go back to it because it's a great interest, certainly, I think, to all of us, and I just want to revisit it because there are some things I want to drive home here. This is really interesting stuff. You know that this is part of this alleged investigation into Trump's, you know, the whole Russia was involved in our elections, colluding allegedly with Trump so that he could win, and that's the reason Hillary lost, and that's the narrative. And of course, it's really quite silly in the breadth of things, because there doesn't seem to be any there. Even Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat from California, said just in the last few days, there's no evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians. They keep saying that. They just like to talk about it and continue to talk about it, but there's no it. It doesn't seem to be any it there. And so it appears that based on this, now FBI Director Comey testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, who Grassley, Senator Grassley chairs. And they got into the basis of the alleged investigation into Trump over his Russian allegations. And so Comey has told us that they're investigating that. And by the way, Andy McCarthy writes a really interesting article on this about how FBI investigations, there are at least two categories, and they're very different. A criminal investigation is a very different thing than a foreign intelligence investigation. They're both FBI investigations, but they're not both the same, and they shouldn't be treated the same. And Andy makes the point that a criminal investigation is, you don't signal that you're doing a criminal investigation. You don't signal when it's over, and you don't signal that you're doing it. And that's the thing that Comey did last July. He signaled that there was an investigation and then announced, Mrs. Clinton, you know, not we just can't find anything. I mean, there's just no way she really meant that. We can't prove that. The fact that she was a senator for years working with intelligence, the fact that she was the head of the State Department, and she knew clearly how to handle intelligence documents, the fact that she set up a secret server in her home to handle top secret classified information. She didn't know what she was doing. That is just, but of course, Comey then pronounced her clean. You know, he talked about her many, you know, she was careless, she was this and that, but she didn't mean it. You know, she didn't really mean it. So we're not going to investigate. That was a totally unnecessary, says Andy. You don't announce when you are investigating someone, and you don't announce when you stop. But with the foreign intelligence, he said it's even more secretive. The information, usually in criminal investigations, the stuff comes out eventually, and it's okay after it's over with. But when it comes to foreign intelligence, it isn't. And so the fact that Comey signals some kind of a foreign intelligence investigation, he said it's just unseemly. But I go back to his Comey's testimony. Of course, he's under fire because the Democrats, Mrs. Clinton, is claiming it's his fault she lost the election. It's unbelievable, really. He saved her because no one's even mentioned the Clinton Foundation. The amount of corruption, the depth of corruption with the Clintons is just unfathomable, and would probably keep an entire section of the Bureau busy for decades if they really did bring charges the way they should have and the way they should. I don't think under Director Comey they'll ever do it. I have told you, and I'll say again, that people that I trust feel that Comey is very much a partisan, and that the reason he came out with his announcement in July was to save Mrs. Clinton's bacon, because something had to come out. It was all leaking out in the press, this business about her email, and so he had to say something in order to save her. And he thought that he, I believe, has admitted this privately. They thought that Mrs. Clinton was going to win. So what difference did it make if they went ahead with, you know, investigations? They were going to, you know, it seems to me, act as though they were doing something, make a public statement and bluster about it, but really do nothing. Because after all, she was then going to be president and it wouldn't matter anyway, but it didn't turn out quite that way. So I digress. By about 8 minutes, I digress. James Comey then said under, when he was being interviewed, especially by Grassley, that they were considering this anti-Trump dossier compiled by a former British intelligence officer so important that he insisted the documents be included in January's final intelligence community report on Russian meddling in the U.S. election. Now, I've mentioned this a number of times, but I want to give you a little more detail, and then I'm going to let you listen to Catherine Herridge's report about this. This is an article by the Daily Caller. Chuck Ross has been reporting on this whole business of the dossier and the Russian interference alleged and all of this in detail. And I want you to hear quite a bit of this, if I can say it, if I can explain it without confusing you. I've told you that this dossier, remember, it's the one that I constantly mock where it says that Trump and three prostitutes, I think, defiled the bed of Barack Obama and his wife, Michelle, in a hotel in Russia. A bed they knew they'd slept in, so he defiled it on purpose. And that was part of the dossier. That's how ridiculous, really. So now, this document was prepared by a group called Fusion GPS. And it turns out that Fusion GPS hired former British spy Christopher Steele. But Fusion GPS, interestingly enough, is actually connected to a guy named Akhmetshin, who is a man who has been a counterintelligence officer, whose main job has been, it seems, according to Chuck Ross, to help the Russian government and its oligarchs. The oligarchs are the rich money people, the people that grabbed the resources after the breakup of the Soviet Union. The corrupt, they're very corrupt. And so, and then also Akhmetshin was engaged in trying to get the sanctions against Russia lifted. So here you got Fusion working with Akhmetshin, a counterintelligence officer of the Russians, to help get this Christopher Steele deliver this report, allegedly pointing to Trump's involvement with the Russians, which allegedly is supposed to help Hillary. It's all very convoluted. But if you know anything about the KGB and the double agent part of what they do, I only know this because of, you know, I've read a lot of books and I grew up during the time when I grew up, but I also know Russian experts who have explained this to me. It's just mind-boggling, the double think that goes on. But here's the deal. It looks like, okay, I'm going to play this for you in just a second. So Lindsey Graham asks Director Comey during the Senate Judiciary Committee meeting, if Fusion GPS, that's the one that prepared the dossier by paying Christopher Steele, the former British spy, was involved. No, I lost this question here. Hang on a second. Whether Fusion GPS was part of the Russian intelligence apparatus. And what does Director Comey say? I can't say. And then Lindsey Graham goes on, do you agree with me that if Fusion was involved in preparing a dossier against Donald Trump, that that would be interfering in our election by the Russians? In other words, that might hurt Donald Trump. And if the Russians cooperated in preparing that dossier, wouldn't that interfere with our elections? Maybe not to help Donald Trump? Comey's answer, I don't want to say. I don't want to say, he says. I'm sorry, mocking him. I can't help it. I just can't help it. It's bizarre to me. And then Grassley goes into this. He pressed Comey and Fusion about the firm's work, both on the dossier and with Akhmetshin, who is, again, the counterintelligence agent. The Republican has questioned Comey about reports, meaning Grassley, has questioned Comey about reports that the FBI agents met with Steele, the British agent that prepared the dossier, and at one point agreed to pay him $50,000 to continue researching Trump. The Bureau has also cited the dossier in an application for a surveillance warrant against former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page. So it was based on this dodgy, that's a British adjective for crummy, worthless, this dodgy dossier, the FBI is paying for them to continue to investigate Donald Trump. So Grassley's saying, well, where did the money come from? And what motivated the people writing the dossier? And then it gets even more convoluted. I almost hesitate to get into this. Let me just say that, you know what, we'll put this article on our Facebook page and you can read more about it. It's with the Daily, Chuck Ross with the Daily Caller. Senator asks Comey, is Trump dossier firm linked to Russian intelligence? It would be interesting, maybe we should just skip ahead here with the clips, Jeff, and let's play clip four, and people can hear Comey respond to Senator Graham.
Chairman mentioned that Fusion. Are you familiar with Fusion?
I know the name.
Okay. Are they part of the Russian intelligence apparatus?
I can't say.
Okay. Do you agree with me that if Fusion was involved in preparing a dossier against Donald Trump, that would be interfering in our election by the Russians?
I don't want to say.
There's a lot of things you do want to say, though, Director Comey. And in fact, Senator Leahy then, Mr. Leaky Leahy. Yeah, the reason he's called Leaky Leahy, was actually called that for a number of years because he was on the Intelligence Committee in the House and he leaked secrets all the time. But he's still there. Now he's in the Senate because that's what happens with people on the left. They get rewarded. So Senator Leahy is asking Director Comey about, did the FBI get information to Rudy Giuliani? And you just need to listen because it's interesting. Here it is. Cut five.
During your investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, a number of surrogates like Rudy Giuliani claimed to have a pipeline to the FBI. He boasted that, and I quote, numerous agents talked to him all the time, close quote, regarding the investigation. He even said that he had insinuated he had advance warning about the emails described in your October letter. Former FBI agent Jim Kallstrom made similar claims. Now, either they're lying or there's a serious problem within the Bureau. Did anybody in the FBI during this 2016 campaign have contact with Rudy Giuliani about the Clinton investigation?
I don't know yet, but if I find out that we're leaking information about our investigations, whether to reporters or to private parties, there'll be severe consequences.
Did you know of anything from Jim Kallstrom?
Same answer. I don't know yet.
Do you know anything about from other former agents?
I don't know yet, but it's a matter that I'm very, very interested in.
But you are?
He's very, very interested in that. Now, he's not really interested, it seems to me, in finding out who leaked, like, let's say, Donald Trump's conversations with world leaders after he was elected. The tapes went out. We were told what was said verbatim. He's not real concerned about the leaks of private conversations of Michael Flynn to press. Doesn't seem like he's real concerned. He's not necessarily on that, but he's going to be on this. Who told Rudy Giuliani about, you know, this dossier and about, who, you know, so yeah, he's sort of selective outrage. But I want to get to Catherine Herridge. I don't want to run out of time for this. Catherine reported on Comey's testimony. Of course, Catherine's the best on this after Wednesday. So let's listen.
The FBI director defended his decision to reopen the Clinton email probe 11 days before Americans went to the polls.
It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election.
Director Comey told the Senate Judiciary Committee thousands of Clinton emails, many new to investigators and classified, were found on Anthony Weiner's computer as part of a separate criminal case. Weiner shared the laptop with his now estranged wife and Clinton aide Huma Abedin.
You took an enormous gamble. The gamble was that there was something there that would invalidate her candidacy. And there wasn't.
Everybody who disagrees with me has to come back to October 28th. Would you speak or would you conceal?
Well, Director, I do think there was a third door available to you in late last year, just before the election, and that was to confirm the existence of an ongoing investigation about the Trump campaign.
Comey was pressed on the decision not to prosecute Abedin or Weiner for mishandling classified information.
How does that conduct not directly violate that statute?
This exchange provided one of the few lighthearted moments during the four-hour hearing.
That anybody that lets Anthony Weiner had classified information probably should be prosecuted. Well, if our laws don't cover that, they probably should.
There's no Anthony Weiner statute, but it is. There's already a
Well, maybe we need one.
Okay, so that's funny. And now Catherine concludes her report. Let's listen.
Comey said he couldn't talk about a document reportedly obtained by Russian hackers that implied then-Attorney General Loretta Lynch would block criminal charges against then-candidate Clinton.
Did the FBI interview the person who wrote the email? If not, why not?
I have to give you the same answer. I can't talk about that in an unclassified setting.
Comey said he took on the burden of speaking publicly last July when he recommended against criminal charges for Clinton because his boss put her impartiality in doubt.
The capper was, and I'm not picking on the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, who I like very much, but her meeting with President Clinton on that airplane was the capper for me.
Comey would not disclose the Bureau's payments to or relationship with Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer who wrote the unverified Trump dossier.
Did anyone from the FBI have interactions with Mr. Steele regarding the issue?
It's not a question that I can answer in this forum.
The failure to provide answers finally boiled over.
If I, Chuck Grassley, as a private citizen, file a Freedom of Information Act, and you give me more information than you'll give to Senator Chuck Grassley, how do you justify that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't.
What do you mean it's a good question? How do you justify it?
What? Oh, I was going to say, it's a good question. I can't as I sit here.
Ye gods.
The FBI director said he is the subject of an ongoing Inspector General's investigation into how the FBI and Justice Department handled the Clinton email case. Director Comey confirmed he has been interviewed. And while there's no timeline for the report, it is expected to tackle Lynch's meeting with Bill Clinton 1 week before his wife's FBI interview.
All right. Well, there you go. Kind of a mess, isn't it? I personally think James Comey should be gone. I think he should be gone. I can't imagine. Ask me what I think. Andy McCarthy. I would put Andy McCarthy there in a heartbeat. But I don't know if the Trump White House will do that because there are disappointments there. All right, I'm going to come back with more. You counted on it, didn't you? Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In addition to discovering $500 billion in accounting errors at HUD, Dr. Ben Carson has made another major move. Using an ignored 1968 law, Dr. Carson will require contractors who build HUD-funded projects to hire people from the very communities to do the work. The projects are announced well in advance, which provides sufficient time to train and employ people from those neighborhoods. Dr. Carson said, that way, we aren't just getting people into public housing. We're equipping them with the tools to get out of it.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
The political and cultural landscape of our nation will continue to undergo major changes with the shift in power in our nation's capital. All the issues we care about, religious liberty, the sanctity of life and marriage, national security, immigration, and the economy will be up for debate. Focal Point will help you process it all from a biblical perspective live every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 Central on American Family Radio. I'm your congenial, convivial, and amiable host, Brian Fisher, and I approve this message.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order your family's copy today at afastore.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Increasingly, America's airlines are being sued by Muslim plaintiffs who claim they have faced discrimination because of their faith and/or their appearance. Interestingly, these plaintiffs all seem to be represented by the Council on American-Islamic Relations, better known as CARE. While CARE purports to be a civil rights group, a new book by the Center for Security Policy demonstrates that it is actually a front for the designated terrorist group Hamas. So, CARE routinely engages in what amounts to lawfare and other acts of political warfare to force Americans to submit to the totalitarian code the Islamists call Sharia. Before any airline settle with CARE and its clients, they should understand that doing so effectively rewards the stealthy jihadists and can only encourage more of their supremacist aggression. This is Frank Gaffney. Read the Center's new book, CARE is Hamas, for free at securefreedom.org.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Back to Director Comey just for a second before I leave that. This is from a former military guy. Actually, this is not. I don't think David French. Maybe he is. David French, National Review. Can't remember. Yeah, I think he maybe was in the military. So sorry, I was not prepared to say that, so I didn't have a chance to check it. He was saying that James Comey revealed that Huma Abedin emailed classified information to Anthony Weiner, allegedly so he could print it out for her. And then David says, if a soldier had sent classified documents to his wife to print out, his best legal outcome would be a one-way ticket to a dishonorable discharge. His worst outcome would be jail. And let's not forget, Hillary and her entire team, including Aberdeen, were bound by law to protect both marked and unmarked classified information. Moreover, Hillary and her entire team were hardly neophytes. They'd been exposed to classified information for years. They knew exactly the types and categories of information they were typically classified, and they knew how they should handle that information. But Aberdeen forwarded emails for printing, anyway. And Hillary stored messages on her homebrew server, anyway. No wonder Hillary lied so loudly and frequently about her emails. The truth was too devastating and incriminating to tell. I still don't understand why the FBI declined to prosecute anyone on Clinton's team, and I still don't understand why the FBI clings to the notion that the prosecution had to prove criminal intent. The standard is gross negligence. But this much I do know. Democratic complaints about Comey's conduct are absurd. He did her and her team an immense favor. Regular folks would have faced prison. Instead, Hillary and her confidants faced the speaking circuit. Justice has not been done. It's an excellent piece, and I just would say that from some former FBI agents, they feel that James Comey is politicizing the FBI. He went beyond the bounds of investigative to prosecutorial. Some believe that James Comey is as much about himself as he is the integrity of the FBI, and that he has changed the image of the FBI from uniquely apolitical, fair, and competent to that of an agency mixed up in politics. So that's a statement from an FBI agent. I just want to drive that home. Last week also, of course, the president signed his executive religious freedom order, and that was on Thursday on the National Day of Prayer. And I want to just say a few things about that. I recognize that many people that I know and like, respect, were in the White House at that signing. Many people are praising the order, saying it's a good first start. That's kind of the theme, and I guess it is. But I would say to you, it kind of speaks volumes when the ACLU issues a statement on an executive order saying that they decided not to file a lawsuit. Today's executive order signing was an elaborate photo op with no discernible policy outcome. After careful review of the order's text, we have determined that the order does not meaningfully alter the ability of religious institutions or individuals to intervene in the political process. The order pretends, but does not yet do harm to the provision of reproductive health services. And then it goes on. And Daniel Horowitz says it very clearly. His title is Trump's Religious Liberty EO Scores Win for New York Values. And what's behind that is, and I'll just tell you, inside information here is that his daughter and got to him, and that there was a really good religious executive order in the works, and that it was altered because who knows why these things happen. I've told you there are conflicts in the White House, and I'm telling you again, this is a problem. And so basically what came out of it was something that really doesn't have much effect. It certainly doesn't have an effect on the cake bakers in Oregon, on Baronelle Stutzman, a florist from Washington State who stands to lose her property. And the Johnson Amendment is really kind of, a shiny object that really doesn't, an executive order doesn't really do much to change anything that still has to be adjudicated by the IRS. It's just really... It's disappointing, and it's disappointing that a daughter in the White House should have that much influence over her dad. But I want to balance that by reading this to you, because this is also true. The president made a statement on the National Day of Prayer, and I want you to hear it. It goes like this. This is the proclamation. I'm going to read parts of it. We come together on our National Day of Prayer as one nation under God to show gratitude for our many blessings, to give thanks for his providence, and to ask for his continued wisdom, strength, and protection as we chart a course for the future. We are united in prayer, each according to our own faith and tradition, and we believe that in America, people of all faiths, creeds, and religions must be free to exercise their natural right to worship according to their consciences. We are also reminded, I have to tell you, that's a little bit, that wording right there bothers me a little bit. We don't want a right to worship. We want more than that. We want a right to live our faith, not just go into our houses of worship and sing hymns. We want a right to be able to exercise our faith in the workplace. We want our right to exercise our workplace when we make exercise our faith when we make decisions on anything. We follow our conscience of religious faith. But let me go on. We are also reminded and reaffirmed that all human beings have the right not only to pray and worship according to their conscience, but to practice their faith in their homes, schools, charities, and businesses, in private and in the public square, free from government coercion, discrimination, or persecution. There you go. Thank you. Religion is not merely an intellectual exercise, but also a practical one that demands actions in the world. Even the many prisoners around the world who are now persecuted for their faith can pray privately in their cells. But our Constitution demands more, the freedom to practice one's faith publicly. The religious liberty guaranteed by the Constitution is not a favor from the government, but a natural right bestowed by God. Our Constitution and our laws that protect religious freedom merely recognize the right that all people have by virtue of their humanity. As Thomas Jefferson wisely questioned, "Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis? A conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God." And it goes back to give a little bit more history. And then he goes back to say, on this National Day of Prayer, the right to pray freely and live according to one's faith is under threat around the world from coercive governments and terrorist organizations. We therefore pray especially for the many people around the world who are persecuted for their beliefs and deprived of their fundamental liberty to live according to their conscience. We pray for the triumph of freedom over oppression and for God's love and mercy over evil. And he goes on, now therefore I, Donald Trump, President of the United States, by virtue of the authority, et cetera, and then signs the order. And I think that's just a, you know, it's a powerful statement, and corrected any concerns I had about the word worship in that first paragraph. It corrected it beautifully. And I think that the original executive order reflected this statement. And I'm just telling you, this is where we are. I don't think you're shocked, are you? I've been really honest with you as I've tried to assess what's going on. We have factions in the White House who have different opinions, and we have a president who's kind of a neophyte in terms of, certainly if he has, I believe that he does, have more of an active interest in the things of God than he used to express. I think we've seen a change in him, but he's certainly, I was just talking to my husband yesterday about discipleship. It just shocks me, honestly, in this country, how little Christians pay attention to the matters of doctrine and understanding. How we don't care. We go to a, you know, we're bored if we're taught anything more than, you know, I don't want to make fun of this, but it's much more than asking for forgiveness of your sins and asking God to forgive you. That is the first step that enters you into a lifelong pattern of learning the mind of God and altering and conforming your own mind to the mind of Christ. And it is a, it's arduous, but it's wonderful. And the more we conform, the more wonderful it becomes. But we stop. We say, all right, they prayed the prayer and that's it. And then this, our churches are filled with people who've done that and nothing more. They don't know scripture. I would say that, you know, Donald Trump is probably doesn't know much. And so I think the truth resonates with him. I'm guessing. These are my guesses. I'm guessing the truth really resonates with him. I think he wanted to sign that executive order, but he doesn't have enough depth to fight against family when they misadvise him. And so it is in the church. You know, I see people in the church who don't understand why it's important that you have right thinking about the deeper things of faith, like whether you can do something to earn your salvation, or whether, you know, what heaven is, what we can know about heaven, or what we can know about the second coming of Jesus, or, you know, or whether it means to be forgiven and sanctified and purified, what holiness means. You fill in the blanks, you know, it's like snores. It's just too deep. We, you know, I'm born again. I prayed and that's it. And I'm telling you, that's not enough. It creates very weak Christians. And I was just thinking, you know, there's a church that I know about that's opening up to membership, and they're having an hour class. And all you have to do is, you know, you have to be, you know, say that you're saved and you've been baptized and you can be a member. And I was just thinking, what a contrast. We were just in Geneva, Switzerland, probably about 7 years ago, my husband and I, on a Reformation tour. And we were right on the river at the site where the Anabaptists were drowned. They were drowned over the issue of being whether baptism was sprinkling or you should be fully submerged as Jesus taught, and as John the Baptist exampled for us. They gave their lives for that. And I think of Martin Luther, who nearly gave his life. He thought he was going to die. He thought he was going to be killed because he was trying to, because of the matter of doctrine, you cannot, you know, buy your loved ones out of purgatory. And there is no such purgatory thing as purgatory. That was important to him. He almost gave his life for that. But now we have an hour class so that we can quickly, you know, get over that those things that aren't really important. And as long as we pray the prayer, and I'm sorry, I'm off on a tangent, but this bothers me tremendously. And I want to challenge those of you listening to me who are followers of Jesus to not be lazy in your thinking. I don't think it doesn't matter to God. I think it does matter a great deal. You know, my husband and I went through, at least we didn't get to finish it, but in another church that we just loved, a whole series on doctrinal teaching. And it sounds dry, but it wasn't at all. It was just invigorating, exciting. And what I understood, you know, was your faith just went down deeper. You stood more solid, more firm on all that you believe. And you can face, you know, what happens in life and also in the culture when you have a better understanding. So, again, that's it's a sidebar there, but could I encourage you to do that? I'm not sure. If you're a pastor listening to me, would you please stop being so lax about these? Take your people further. Take yourself further. If you don't feel like you got it back in seminary the way you should have so that you can't teach it, there are tools and resources. Dr. Lutzer, my friend, Erwin Lutzer at Moody Church, they teach doctrine. There are such great resources, and it's exciting to learn about the Trinity. Believe me, it is. It's exciting because it's a mystery, and it helps you understand the inexpressible wonders, as much as we can as humans, of the God that we serve. And again, your faith just goes deeper, and you get excited. And so can I just challenge all of you? Maybe just take on one thing. You know, what does God's love mean? And what does salvation really mean? What does it mean to be saved? Can you explain that? It seems like it's a term that we use so often. You know, that's something I grappled with many years ago when I was a younger Christian. But it's something you should be able to explain that and understand it for your own sake. So I think, you know, I'm just admonishing you just because that's what I think God's called me to do. So anyway, the healthcare bill, of course, passed in the House, and they made such a big deal out of it on Thursday. That was a little hard to watch, I have to say. That was hard for me to watch. It was like it reminded me of the description we had at the beginning of the show by Katie Hopkins of the Macron in the square, like scripted. It was they were in the, you know, the Rose Garden, and they were smiling unnaturally, like they were excited. I thought, well, you know, we've been wanting the Republicans. This is the Republican leadership, and some of the Republicans that voted for the healthcare bill just in the House. We wanted them to learn to message better, but this is like they're doing what the Democrats do when they pretend like some signing is a big deal and they call it some nice name. And there's just got to be some there. There's got to be truth there. We're going to talk about healthcare more. Maybe we'll even do that tomorrow because now it enters into the Senate. And of course, the Senate, you know, they can only lose two Republican senators to not pass this new Affordable Health Care Act, in the Senate. And they're in danger of losing more than that. And so the chances of it passing in the Senate are not good. I have to tell you that. And I have to say, I'm not sure. I'm sorry about that. But I'll leave you dangling with that one, and we'll come back to it tomorrow. Well, all right. Sandy Rios in the morning on this Monday on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.